Leader Talk.
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 Hi everyone, my name is Natalie Dawson. Welcome to Leader Talk. This show is proudly brought to you by Brainiac. Each week we are meeting with incredible leaders from around the world to discuss all things leadership and business insights. Each person coming on this talk show has given up their valuable time for one very clear purpose: to give back to small and medium business owners. Now, have you ever thought about what your employees might be saying about the culture of your business? Perhaps you want to ensure you have a great workplace culture, but is the culture really as great as you think it is? Well, today, Gus and I are fortunate to chat to our guest speaker, Aga Bayer. Aga is a cultural strategist, founder of Culture Brained, author of Building and Sustaining a Coaching Culture, and the creator and host of the Culture Lab podcast. Aga is here today to teach us all how we can all build a better culture that brings our vision to life and ensures our team love turning up to work each and every day. Welcome to the show, Aga.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
And Aga, we once again want to say big thank you for donating your valuable time. You know, before even we start, we talk about culture, we will talk about how to bring people to your workplace. Looking at your background, I want to work with you. You know, you look at that, you know, Natalie, let's just work there, eh? That is
let's work together.
Exactly.
I'm all for it.
It's just so peaceful before we start. So once again, thank you for donating your time, Aga.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. You do wonderful work. You are on a really important mission. So I'm so thrilled to be here with you today.
Thanks, Aga. We have a really exciting topic to chat about. But before we get into that, we do ask our guests two really fun questions. And we have yours prepared. So our first one, we're going to ask you, if you had to eat one meal every day for the rest of your life, just one meal, what would it be?
You know, the people who know me are going to laugh because I actually am really well known for getting stuck on a specific dish and then having the same thing almost every day. So it's not a hard question for me to answer because based on this phase right now that I'm in, it would be a Buddha bowl. And for the listeners who are not entirely sure what it is, it's basically a bowl of all the things that you like. So we can have some quinoa in it, some kale, other veggies, chicken, whatever, and you just mix it. You put a nice dressing on it. It's delicious and it works for me. So I think I'd have that.
That is very cruel because in Melbourne right now, it's 7:30 and it's dinner time for many of us. So please, can you just tone down?
Am I making it hungry?
Yes, absolutely. Can you just say, though, you know, I just really like Kyle without nothing, you know, or something, you know, but you put chicken and sauce and everything else.
I know. Right? It really is delicious. I'm sorry to say that, but it really is. So I could definitely have that every single day. And you can have variety because you don't have to make your Buddha bowl in the same way. So like it can be different every single day.
Is that a Japanese dish? Because I think it's something similar to what we have here.
I don't know. Actually, it's a really good question. I don't know the origin of the name itself, but it sounds like,
because I'm thinking of poke bowl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a concept that you throw things into a bowl. Yeah, so it could be. And it's basically, I think, linked to this trend of healthy eating where you put all the things that are good for you. And
fantastic. Yeah. And one more, if you could live in any country, which country would you live in? And this is a tough one for you because I know that you've lived in quite a few countries.
Yes, I have moved around quite a bit. And you know, the funny thing is that every time I move somewhere, I'm like, this is it. I really love this place. I think I could stay here forever. But in my case, I think it's safe to say nothing is forever because we have moved around quite a bit. But right now I'm based in Athens in Greece. And I think Greece is such a wonderful place to live. So I would go with Greece for now. Am I allowed to change my opinion later?
Yeah. It's not, I have nothing against Greece, because I like everything about food from the country you live in right now. But just to remind everyone, prior to the pandemic, Melbourne is the most livable city in the world for 8 years. So I'm a very passionate Melbourne. Yes.
Although Sydney's better, right, guys?
Well, now I don't know what number now, but,
Yeah, you are lucky, I have to say. I mean, first of all, I've never been to Australia. This has to change. But of course, I know it's a wonderful place to visit and to live in. So I think we're all lucky. We live in wonderful places.
And now, Aga, at the beginning, we only gave a really brief introduction to you. And we were hoping you can tell both Gus and I and our audience a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. So I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Culture Brained. I think one of our most proud accomplishments is that we've created a one-of-a-kind culture accelerator, really, and a community of culture leaders who are looking for new, better ways of cultivating thriving company cultures. And I see this as our most proud accomplishment because I'm a huge believer in the power of community, and I'm a huge believer in peer-to-peer learning and learning from practitioners, not just people who are great in theory. And so it's wonderful to see people coming together and exchanging notes on, you know, what I'm doing in my company, tell me what you are doing. Or, you know, when you have a challenge, you can reach out to someone and ask, hey, how have you dealt with that in your company? So that's a really important piece of our work for me, bringing people together so that they can reinvent the future of work together.
So it's a community base. So anyone, any of our listeners can join your community? Is that how it
works? That's a really great question. And we've given a lot of thought to it. So when thinking about, you know, how do you cultivate a sense of belonging? It's one of the paradoxes, right? Because here's the thing. If anyone can join, it's not a place for anyone. So you need to set these boundaries. So the answer is no, not everyone can join necessarily. Our members are vetted. We have a very specific criteria as to who can join. This is a predominantly a community for people in scale-ups, so companies that grow, and a community for people who work on a very specific culture-related project or initiative in their company. So you don't necessarily have to be head of people and culture, but you have to be someone who has skin in the game and whose career and success depend on their company culture, which, by the way, I would say it's probably everyone, really, when we think about this, right? Because culture is so important. But we do want to have these boundaries so that our members feel like it's the right place for them.
And the members come from all over the world?
Yes, they do. We're super proud of that because it's a truly global community. So in order to cater to this audience, we have two different time zones because we have people in Asia, we have people in Australia, but we also have people in the Western part of the world, US, Canada, and so on and so forth. It's really hard for them to meet at an hour that works for everyone. So we make sure that people can participate and engage and interact from all parts of the world. And there are also a lot of asynchronous ways of connecting. We have a private platform where people can just post something and say, I have this problem. Is there anyone anywhere in the world who knows the answer? And we actually pride ourselves on the following KPI. When someone posts a question, we get at least three really in-depth, generous, wonderful answers from other members within the first 24 hours. And I think, you know, there are not a lot of places where you can get that kind of support for your culture so quickly.
It does sound really, the whole topic about culture is exciting. And that's where I just want to take it a bit back for our listeners. Just, I know this is a really obvious question, but so that everyone can understand culture, can you explain really simply for our audience the difference between what is a great culture and then obviously what is a toxic culture? Because when we're talking about culture, they might just think, you know, there's the positive, but we need to understand there is a whole spectrum.
Yeah, I love this question. And I want to zoom out a little bit and first define what culture even is, right? Because I think it's important to set that context. So think about it this way. I think it's an easy and straightforward definition of culture. Culture is what picks up when employee handbook leaves off, So it's basically all these informal norms that drive behaviors at work, especially when no one's looking, right? So when you know that no one will know what you did, you still do something in a certain way. This is what culture is. And so back to your question, Natalie, around what is a great culture? My answer will be very short and very simple. And then, of course, I can unpack it. I believe that a great culture is a culture that unlocks greatness in people. In other words, you know, a great culture is a culture that drives high performance and makes your business successful. And a toxic culture, on the other hand, is a culture where you have a lot of unnecessary friction, a lot of unnecessary drama, a lot of unnecessary unethical behaviors, and a lot of stuff that prevents people from being able to do the best work of their careers. So that's a simple and short way of answering, and happy to elaborate if you
follow up. I have a question for you, Aga. You know, when we talk about great culture, you mentioned before, great culture could also connecting to where great performance thriving. And when we look at the great performance, whether it's in the small, medium, large business, athletes, sports, which is a business too, there's a lot of discipline required to be in place to make the great performer or great performance culture thrive. But discipline, how do I put this? Discipline could mean we've taken away a lot of ice cream from the employees. And I give a lot of, you know, if I have a business, I really want to give ice cream every day. But then if this is a sporting club, then all my employee will be unhealthy. So then they will be unhappy. Then they start blaming me why I'm not giving the ice cream. So where do we start, Aga? As a business, we want to build a great performance team.
Yeah.
Great performance team involves discipline. How do I build both of them while people still smiling when discipline?
This is such a great question, and I love this question on so many different levels. I mean, even starting from ice cream, I don't know, Gus, if you know, but my first business was an ice cream factory. And one of the reasons we created that business when we were 20-something years old, completely naive, and with zero business experience, I told my friend, I will go into business with you, but only if we can find something that is going to make people smile. And he was like, ice cream. So it's a really funny story because that business still exists, is actually one of the biggest ice cream manufacturers in the Central Eastern Europe, so still going strong. So back to your question, discipline, and is a great culture, a culture where people are happy? I am so glad that you asked this question because I feel very strongly about this, actually. I don't think that as founders, as leaders, as heads of people and culture in companies, our job is to make our people happy. This is a personal responsibility of every individual in our company. Our own happiness is our own responsibility. As a founder, as a leader, as head of people and culture, we have a slightly different responsibility, though, and we should commit to something else, not to make our people happy, but to create an environment where people can thrive, where they have everything that they need in order to do the best work of their careers, and also to create the kind of experience where people have a sense of fun, meaning, and belonging at work. So, and I want to make that differentiation because this is indeed a pitfall that a lot of us fall into. We want our people to be happy. And so it's all about, you know, ping pong tables and massage therapists coming to the office and giving people massages, et cetera, et cetera. And then what happens is, of course, we are human beings. We get used to it. It has zero impact on us anymore. And we want more, or we simply consider that a given. And it has zero impact on how happy we feel actually with our work and how well we are able to perform. So I would say, do not focus on making your people happy. I love that focus that you have on discipline, because I think it's really important in business, and anyone who has built a successful business knows that, that discipline is important. So for me, it's just shift your focus. You know, you are not the person that is going to make people happy, but you are the person who's responsible for creating that environment where people can thrive.
I'm for the first time ever not looking down to actually write something because I don't know where to write, because this is such a powerful message for everyone, for every business leaders, which I will share inside my organization as well. I'm part of a very large organizations that run globally, that I think I really like what you say, that as a leader, as a people leaders, anyone that own a business, we need to shift from making people happy to creating an environment where people can thrive and feel happy because they choose to be happy in that environment. Is that right? Am I accurate to say that?
Yeah, you're absolutely accurate. You know, we should not forget that there is a different reason why we come to work than a reason why we marry someone or a reason why we become friends with someone, right? People come to work because they want to, hopefully it's not just for the paycheck, right? They want to be stimulated. They want to do something that is interesting. They want to solve interesting problems, and they want to be enabled in solving these interesting problems. They want to do work that they can be proud of. They want to meet interesting people, right? So for sure, 100%. And it has a social aspect as well. This is why you come to work. You want to have a sense of meaning, like what I'm doing is important. It has impact on something that is larger than me. And finally, we do want to have that sense of belonging. We do want to be able to say, I am part of this company and it makes me feel proud. I'm aligned with its values and what it's trying to do in the world. So instead of focusing on making people happy, which is such a fuzzy way, right, of thinking about this, I think it's so much better to think, what are the pillars of a healthy work environment, and how can we strengthen them so that people can have the best possible work experience at work, not life experience at work, because work is just a part of life. And we cannot possibly make people's lives great. We can make their work experience great. So I find that it's important to make that differentiation.
Sorry, Nat, this, I have to ask one more. I tend to hijack this and let's just make it, I'm an owner of a restaurant that selling, what do you call, poke bowl?
The bowl.
Yeah, the bowl. Yes. Poke bowl, you know, I have, you know, 30 staff and we're quite successful. You know, mm-hmm. We're not only putting chicken on our bowl, vegetarian bowls. We're putting salmon, we're putting prawns, and I put everything in there. How do mm-hmm. you know as a leader that the environment that you create is actually great performance culture? Like, do you have any basic, you know, like, hey, great environment, at the very least have this thing, you know?
Yes.
Is it any?
Yeah. Absolutely. Happy to share what I think is important to look at. But a really quick answer to your question, Gus, is how do you know? You listen, right? I think, again, as leaders, and that is particularly true for people who have this entrepreneurial spirit, they have created maybe this business, this restaurant, right? And they feel like, often, they feel like they need to have all the answers. And so they try to figure it out on their own. And that's one of the pitfalls when building a great culture. You don't know. And I think a safe assumption to make as a leader is that you have blind spots. and that there are certain things that you don't see. So unless you are willing to sit down with your team members and talk with them and really listen, and when I say really listen, it's a whole science, how you listen as a leader so that you truly encourage people to share what's really important with you. But you really need to listen to find out whether indeed you have created that environment. But there is a shortcut, of course, even before you listen. If you look at your business and there's something you see potential that is not being tapped into, there's something that is not happening in the way that you know is possible, something's holding you back. If it's not the tools, if it's not the processes, if it's not right, it's probably your culture. And so you're probably not creating that environment. So basically, the red flags are in how your team performs and the business results that you have. Now, you asked, is there anything that I should be looking at to know, you know, is our culture healthy? Absolutely. And actually, I've done a lot of research because this has been a question at the center of my work. And I really wanted to know what basically differentiates a high-performing team and a high-performing organization from one that struggles, especially when it comes to culture, obviously. And I've realized that the answer has been there for millennia. We've known those things, and it's pretty simple. And it all goes back to how our brains are wired and how humans operate in society, basically. So I've found three pillars of thriving cultures that, again, as I've mentioned, are a part of how we are wired. The first one is, as human beings, we are wired for play and having fun. Like when you look at children, we might lose it with age, but that's social conditioning. It's not our nature. They learn through play. They learn how to interact with others through play, right? And it's an incredibly important survival mechanism for human beings as well. So I've discovered that one of the key pillars of a thriving culture is what we call fun, but it's not the fun of ping pong tables and, you know, and Friday pizza parties, but the joy of work itself. So the question is, do I really enjoy what I'm doing? Is it firing me up? Is it giving me energy, or is it draining my energy? And what we've noticed in our research is that the sense of fun comes from three things. And it was really shocking to me because my findings were exactly the same with findings of a lady called Catherine Price, who did a completely independent research, and we landed on the same findings, which I think speaks to the power of those insights. So what we notice is, number one, in order for people to have fun at work, they need to have be in flow. Right. And flow is this concept from a psychologist called Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. I'm not going to go into a lot of details, but to be in flow, we need two things. One is we need to do something that stretches us out of our comfort zone. Doing the same repetitive thing every day is not going to put us into flow. So we need that. But we also need to have space to be in deep focus on the task that we are performing. So these two things are really important to be in flow. Then back to what else contributes to a sense of fun. When we ask people, tell me about the last time you had fun at work, they always mention other people and how they connected with others in a meaningful way. So it's human connections and relationships. People cannot have fun at work if they do not collaborate. And it's equally true for extroverts as it is for introverts. And again, that was a huge surprise for me because, frankly, I thought that some people, you know, software engineers, they will be absolutely happy to be locked in a small cubicle and just code for the whole day. Not true, apparently. And then finally...
Can I stop you there?
Yes, please.
I'm busy with serving customers. This waitress and you know, Natalie as the chef running around, running out of chicken and salads. How do I make them collaborate? How do I make them collaborate? Are you asking me to work more on weekends to take them to the park and still eat ice cream?
I love it. I love this question because there is an assumption that I see a lot. And the assumption is, if I want to make my people collaborate, for example, or connect with others, I will need to do extra curricular activities like the ones that you've mentioned, or it's going to be a lot of work. But the thing is, and the beauty of that is that it doesn't have to be additive. So you don't need to add to what you are already doing. You just need to shift and change how you are doing things. So for example, instead of telling your people, hey, I think that this week we should be putting salmon on all of our Buddha bowls, because, you know, I've heard that there is a great salmon on the market. Our clients love salmon. Let's do that. Let's go for that. This is one way of doing things. Another way of doing things is to say, hey, Gus, Natalie, Jen, can you sit together or just chat for 5 minutes and talk about what could be our this week's offering, right? So you give people a task. You give them a task that kind of stretches them out of their comfort zone because they've never come up with an idea for a new dish, for example. So it's new to them. You give them a tiny space. It can be even 5 minutes, literally, right? A break where they have this break together. You give them a space to think about it collectively and then come up with a solution. It energizes people. It engages them. It has really positive impact. And actually, you do less work, not more work than you what you were doing before. So it's not adding something to what you're doing. It's changing how you are doing it.
It's a great answer. I know we bumped into that. Aga, we went back. You mentioned that there were three things. We spoke about fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then we mentioned the collaboration. What were the other two?
So the pillars are fun, meaning, and belonging. And each of them has three levels and three elements within each of them. So I started unpacking fun with you. The final element of fun is playfulness, which is simply, you know, not taking yourself too seriously, having levity and humor. And it's so fascinating. There's research, and this research has been available for decades, that shows that the most inspiring leaders, people who have the most impact, they don't take themselves seriously. They are capable of those moments where they're being goofy and funny and just diffuse the tension in the team, you know? And again, it's not an additional thing that you're going to do as a leader. You do it differently, right? When you see that your team struggles to find a solution or there is a lot of tension, you know that your people are not going to be able to be innovative in that moment, because basically our amygdala hijacks our brain. So when I talk about creating that environment for our people to thrive in, sometimes it's taking people into the right headspace and creating that right headspace for them. And it can be cracking a joke. It can be as simple as that, right? So you don't need to buy a new HR IT system. You don't need to make a huge investment of time. You just create that environment by saying something funny or, you know, making fun of yourself or just doing a goofy thing that is going to lighten things up.
It's such a simple thing, isn't it? Yet, you know, when we think of those leaders that refuse to crack that joke, or they're serious, or, you know, really strict, and, you know, you think lighten up, here you are saying, just crack that joke, have the fun with your employees, because it does affect.
And you know, Aga, in our restaurant, I'm the fun one. Natalie get cranky when there is so many orders, she throw the pan out of the window. I mean, right. I'm just telling the truth out of the public. Natalie said the right thing, but she's the one when there is a lot of orders coming to her kitchen, she's not smiling. Eh? I'm there. Isn't it?
I Natalie? Like to have a lot of fun. No, it is. It's really interesting. I'm just listening to all of that, and we have a lot of. A common theme that comes up with our audience is always, you know, we are so time poor and maybe, you know, this sounds like it is a lot of work. I don't have time for it. I'm going to park it in the too hard basket. Aga, what advice do you have for those small and medium business owners that are going, I'll leave that till next year, you know, a 2024 thing? Like, how important or yeah. What advice would you have for them? I'm kind of answering the question here. So, what would you say to them?
You know, I would sit down with them just like I would sit down with a friend who tells me, you know, I know that health is important and I know that I should be doing more to be healthy, but I just don't have time to do it. And I would just take them into, right, when is going to be the right time and what could be potential consequences if you end up ignoring that for 2 years. This is the problem with culture. You know, culture is a vitamin problem until it becomes a painkiller problem. When it becomes a painkiller problem, it's basically, it means culture is the problem. And then, of course, you feel the sense of urgency of fixing it. But when you have that sense of urgency of fixing your culture, it's already toxic or dysfunctional, and it's going to be that much harder to do that work. So basically, by not taking action now, you are making your life so much more difficult later on. It's a little bit like with scrambled eggs, you know, when you have second thoughts, you've scrambled the eggs and there they are, and you wanted poached eggs. It's really hard to unscramble them and to make poached eggs out of, I'm not, right? Not impossible, perhaps. I don't know. Maybe you could do something, but it's going to be so much harder. And I think successful entrepreneurs and successful leaders, they have the discipline. I'm going back to your point, Gus, about discipline. They actually have the discipline. I find it striking that successful entrepreneurs work out every day. They have their morning routines. They take action proactively before they face problems. And so I think that they should be using the same way of thinking about culture as they're using when they think about building their business or making sure that they have the health that they want or the energy that they need to be successful, you know, because these are the choices, to be honest. Either you take these small actions now on a daily basis, or simply do things slightly differently, as I've mentioned, or you are up to face a very serious problem down the road, because cultures tend to devolve into something that you don't want unless you are intentional about them.
You know what frustrates me, and I think a lot of people, is like everything you say here, I don't have to go to school. You know, means that we have to be able to joke in the genuine way. We need to be able to create a fun and challenging task so people are stretched out. We need to create a sense of belonging. But yet we can't do it. Yet yes. It's hard. So
yes.
What is the problem? I want to go one level down. What is the problem? Mm-hmm. So if I'm the problem, yet the solution, you work with everyone across the world, in from America to Asia, from mm-hmm. Europe to Middle East, and mm-hmm. the problem is the same. What are you saying, that the problem is we just don't take the decision to want to do it? Or what is the problem? Because when I hear this, it's like I'm expecting a rocket science answer with, you know, 200 steps how to fix mm-hmm. my Pokeball business here. But mm-hmm. you make it. Yet it's difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why we don't take action on something that is not rocket science is that there's not enough clarity. We kind of know what we need to be doing, but of course there are so many different schools of thought and so many consultants, authors, writers, CEOs, and everyone has an opinion and everyone says you should be doing this, you should be doing that. And I think that we get lost in tactics instead of focusing on the principles. And so I'm a big fan of giving people a little bit more clarity, a little bit more simplicity, and instead of giving them a shopping list with a million of tactics, like, I don't know, have a stand-up meeting every morning where you talk about how you saw your colleagues live this particular value, I would say, no, you do you. You do what works for you. But the principle is this one, right? And the principle is, for example, your people need to have a sense of fun at work. And fun means that. Your people need to have a sense of meaning at work. And meaning means that. Now you make it work for you. Because what Zappos is doing or, you know, what Netflix is doing, it's not going to work for you.
I think it likened to this. Aga, once our team participated in it was mm-hmm. a marathon. This is how I'm mm-hmm. envisaging this, Gus. So maybe this will help explain it to our listeners. Correct me if I'm wrong, Aga. And there were all of us competed in different things. Someone did a 5K run, someone did a 10K run, someone did a 40. Some walk the 5K run, but everything was fun to everyone at different levels. But as a team, all turned up, we did it together, mm-hmm. and the outcome was we raised money for, it was Neuroblastoma Australia, but we did it together, but everyone, mm-hmm. fun meant different things to different people. Is that what you mean by that, Aga? Because that's how I'm imagining it.
I absolutely love this example. This is such a great way to illustrate it. And I'm also super happy that you've raised this issue, because clearly we need people to have space to define what it looks like for them. And clearly it's going to be different in different departments. And so this is the beauty of having a principle instead of having a recipe for people, right? So you say the principle is that now you figure out how it's going to work for you. But we know through science that this thing is a necessary thing for your team to thrive. Now, how you do it, this is entirely up to you. And this should be encouraged. So we actually encourage the companies that we work with to engage their people in conversations about what is this going to look like, both when it comes to these three pillars, but we also help our clients, the companies that we work with, to activate their values, for example. And again, you know, if you have a value of, I don't know, being unconventional, we have a company that we work with has this as a value, being unconventional. You know, the way it shows up in accounting, hopefully, is going to be quite different from the way it shows up in marketing. We would hope so, right? And they can still use this as a principle, but it has to be different. So it's not only it's okay, it has to be different. Otherwise, it just stays as a poster on the wall and people cannot figure out, how do I embrace it? How do I live it? What is the value of this thing for me at work?
Such an interesting, the whole culture topic is just so interesting. And I do want to ask, because a lot of business owners, you know, they're out and about, they put a lot of trust in their team and they may not necessarily be involved with the team. Are there any, and you know, they're thinking, oh, our culture's great. Mm. You know, I've got the ping pong table, I've got a pool table, I've got the massages. Mm-hmm. They're thinking it's great. But really, it's toxic. But because they're so far, like they haven't got their foot in with the teams, they can't see these. Are there any red flags that such leaders need to be, or business owners need to mm-hmm. be looking out for?
Natalie, you are raising such an incredibly important point. The first thing that I want to say is that you should assume as a leader that you do have a blind spot. Not I might have, but it's 100% sure. I have never, ever seen a leadership team that was aware of all the issues that were happening in the organization. When we do a culture snapshot, there are always gaps between the senior leadership team perspective and the perspective of the rest of the organization. So that's a given. It's like taxes and death in life, you know, 100%. You will have a blind spot. Now, how can you minimize your blind spot and what are the red flags? Back to your question. One thing that you should be really worried about is when there is too much harmony or silence. And even in your team, so if you are the CEO and you work with a senior leadership team, when you throw an idea on the table or when you ask a question and no one offers their views, ideas, opinions, or they are simply to accommodate the way you are thinking about the problem, something's happening. It's not normal. People will have opinions that differ from yours. So they're probably not telling you something, and probably you are complicit in creating this situation. So silence or too much harmony, too much agreement, it's a huge red flag. Another thing that I've noticed that very often actually goes unnoticed is when people speak about clients, colleagues, or other people in the wider ecosystem in a way that is almost, there's almost contempt, right? So there's lack of respect, there's irritation, there's frustration or blaming others for things that are happening. It might seem harmless at the beginning, you know, especially when it comes to clients. I know that very often you will hear this conversation, oh my God, this jerk, you know, it's just completely irrational demands, et cetera, et cetera. How your people talk about your clients, how your people talk about their colleagues is very indicative of how they act and how they think. And if it's okay to express your opinion behind someone's back of that sort, and you know, no one addresses that, it's a huge red flag, because a lot of things are attached to that contempt that is being expressed. And finally, I think one of the classic ones when it comes to red flags is consistently sacrificing relationships or people to achieve results. You know, all this stuff around, we'll just pull one more all-nighter to deliver this project, and then it happens again and again and again, and you never set boundaries, or you simply, you know, walk over dead bodies to accomplish something, et cetera, et cetera. This is very alarming. Results should never be the ultimate goal, especially in short term. So when you see that mentality, when as a CEO, your people come to you and it's clear that they are not concerned about the impact that these decisions are going to have on their colleagues, on the customers, on the wider community that you operate in, huge red flag to me. And, you know, we've seen a lot of scandals that our listeners are very familiar with in larger companies, Volkswagen, Boeing, right? It was all about results. And of course, it was extremely toxic. But there are a lot of situations like this in smaller companies as well. It's just that they don't get that much publicity. But unfortunately, you know, if you drive results only and don't take care of your people are not going to take care of results, and it's a shortcut to disaster, basically.
Assume that we already there in the toxic way. This restaurant is so toxic, and I'm just listening to this podcast, and everything is wrong, including me as the owner, Natalie, mm-hmm. as the head chef. We fight every day. Everyone not happy. The waitress talk about the customer that comes. Like, this is, we are just it. We are in the bottom of the floor right now. And where do we start? Now it's toxic. I admit it. Yeah. I have a blind spot. I create this. I now understand why Natalie get angry every single day cooking the salmon.
Where
do I start now?
Listen, you are already one step ahead of many of Buddha Bowl restaurants out there, right? Because you are acknowledging that you have contributed to this situation. What we see very often is that people at the top are trying to find fault with their team members rather than looking at themselves and asking themselves, how have I contributed to creating this environment? And again, if there is one thing that is 100% sure, is that as the founder or creator or the owner of that restaurant, you have contributed to this situation big time, hugely. And so the first step is really reflect, what have I been doing that has created this mess? And the second question to ask yourself is, what am I ready to do now to move the needle in the right direction? And the first step, if you want to be taken seriously by your team, is to be open and humble about it and say, I've recognized that I've made many mistakes over the past whatever months, and I now know that this was not the right way to go, and this is what I intend to do going forward. And then the name of the game is basically walk that talk. So be consistent, and you change first. You change first before you demand anyone else in your team changes. Otherwise, and people will typically want to jump to the next stage, which is right. But I do have a couple of bullies on my team, or I do have toxic people, et cetera, et cetera. And so shouldn't I address that? Of course you should. No question about it. And maybe actually the way you have contributed to the situation is that you haven't held these people to account. That might be the issue. So if that's the issue and that's the action, then you need to make sure that these behaviors are being addressed. I think that depending on the culture that you want to cultivate, but I would assume that the culture that you want to cultivate is a culture where people can improve and grow and correct their mistakes. So I'm a big believer in giving people a second chance, but being radically candid about what has gone wrong and what you expect in the future. And having that agreement that going forward, I will no longer be able to accommodate these behaviors or accept the situation. So let's figure out how we move forward from here. And the thing is, with brilliant jerks particularly, and brilliant jerks is a term that is being used in the space of culture, you know, it's this incredible chef. And actually, because we're using this analogy of a restaurant, it happens often in restaurants that you have this brilliant chef, right? And they are really talented. Maybe they even worked for a Michelin star restaurant, whatever. They have great reputation. They're super creative, et cetera, but they are a nightmare to work with and they break people. So like, what do you do? Do you accept that behavior because they are still capable of creating amazing menus and dishes, or do you address that? Well, if you don't want to have a toxic culture, you need to address that. That's the hard part of the work. You cannot tolerate brilliant jerks on your team if you want to have a healthy culture, full stop.
I love that term. It's just an interesting one. And, you know, you hear it, you do hear it often. You've got someone in the team that is so valuable. They know something technical that no one else does. So it's like, no, we'll just keep them on the team. And yet it's affecting everyone. And it's what you've said, you know, you've got to work towards something. These are the conditions. We can't tolerate this. It's such an important thing to address.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that we don't do often enough or well enough is once we have this conversation, are we making ourselves available to support these people to make the changes? Because obviously if someone has always behaved a certain way and they believe this is their recipe for success, it's not going to be easy and they will need some help and support to change that behavior and rewire their brain because, you know, what got them here worked. So suddenly you tell them, stop being a jerk, stop behaving this way. How do they know that it's still going to produce great results? They don't. So they need support in that. And I think especially in small businesses where resources are limited, obviously, very often you can't hire an executive coach for your chef, for example. So, you know, it will have to be you. You will have to be there and help them find new, better ways of working with their colleagues.
And they are tough discussions, aren't they, Algar? Like, it's not easy to have these discussions with someone who performs well, but they are bringing and delivering a toxic culture.
100%. I want to acknowledge that and respect the fact that these are terrifying conversations because, you know, if you have in a restaurant, a chef, if they leave, it can destroy you, right? Or at least it's going to be incredibly disruptive to your business and you are going to go through hell to find a replacement and find a person that fits the business and the concept, et cetera, et cetera. So it is terrifying. And I want to acknowledge that. But, you know, avoiding having these conversations, unfortunately, is not producing positive results. It's not an option for me. What is a good option, a better option, is learning how you can do it well. How can you have a great conversation that is difficult, but at the same time leads to constructive results? There are plenty of resources, plenty of materials. One of the approaches and a book that I like is Difficult Conversations, very straightforward title. And there are a lot of tools that people can use to learn from. And and you know, even if you Google it, how to have a difficult conversation, you'll get so many hits. So I get it. You might not have a budget. to go to training or time, but you can still learn a few principles that you can use and apply in your conversations with your colleagues.
And dealing with your own community, that businesses across the world, you see business can change, culture can be developed if these are executed.
Yes. Fantastic. Yes. And actually, you know, I've been doing this work for more than 20 years now. And before I create Culture Brained, I was leading consulting teams in companies like Korn Ferry and Hay Group and PricewaterhouseCoopers. And so all of these companies have amazing tools to measure culture. And because it's been a 20 plus journey of consulting, I've seen these shifts that were measurable. So not only I think that it's possible, but I've seen it change. So we've been with clients for 10 years and every single year they would do a snapshot of the culture, and you could see how culture was improving and how the results would follow the improvements in their culture. So there's evidence and data that shows that if you invest in your culture, your business is going to do better. And also what's important and heartbreaking, we've seen these organizations that had this evolution throughout a period of 10 years, always getting better and better every single year. And then a CEO changed. And it was all back to base one. So I just want to say that because I know that people who are listening are predominantly leaders in small and medium-sized businesses. You are important. You are important, and everything that you do is incredibly important. It has disproportionately huge impact on your culture. And so really walking the talk and being the change that you want to see in your company and role modeling what you want to scale as your company grows, it should be your number one priority. There's nothing more important than that. Not for your culture, for your business and for your business results. It's a domino effect.
Absolutely brilliant advice, Aga. And I'm looking at the time. This topic is one that both Gus and I are really passionate about. And, you know, we could talk for ages. But for those listeners that do want more information, you know, you've got so much knowledge to share, and, you know, there's this community set up. Is there somewhere where the audience can go for more information?
Yes, absolutely. I think the best place to go to is my website, which is agabayer.com. It's agabajer.com. You can explore that. We have a lot of free resources. We have my podcast there and the book, and the community is there on the website as well. And one of the places where I am, not physically, but definitely virtually every single day is LinkedIn. So you can please follow me on LinkedIn, connect through LinkedIn, message me through LinkedIn. I'm really happy to hear from people and see how I can help. So I think these are two best places to go to. My book is available on Amazon and in many bookstores, so people can check that out as well. And I'd love to hear from you, actually, because, you know, one of the things that I love in my work is to know what are the pain points, what are the problems, what do people struggle with most, because it really helps us deliver the impact that we want to have if we know what people struggle with. So, yeah, absolutely. Reach out. Let us know.
Amazing. And we are reaching the end of the show. So, Gus, I'm going to hand it over to you to summarize. I know there was a part that you didn't write. Because you are so engaging, Aga, you know, really passionate and engaging, and you do forget to write. Yeah, so I
see
you, Gus.
This is the part where sometimes I really like it and sometimes I actually hate it. And in this instance, I hate it because I just want to say that I learned a lot just for the past 1 hour. You know, I think the insight and the depth of your understanding and making it so simple for us all to understand, and hopefully for our audience, are amazing. I really hope that whatever I write here, I actually write like 4 pages, but it's all over the place because every time I write, I cross it. So I really hope I do justice on this. But once again, if it's not accurate, please visit Aga websites. We will have all Aga informations on Brainiac website as well for you to tune in and get more details. So this, let me start with this. Culture is what employees take off when the company handbook is taken. That's what you said. Basically, after every rule is taken off and you are by yourself or your employee in the corner of the building, what he or she doing is that's what represents what no one listening, what the culture is all about. Great culture is where great performance can thrive. We, as a leaders, as a business owner, need to create an environment where sense of belonging, meaning, and fun are available. And this is the three things that you talk about. And obviously, we can go in depth if we have this for 3 hours. But I think, really, I love this one. Number one, you said play and having fun beyond ping pong and providing pizza. Instead, have the ability to find a deeper fun of creating environment where stretching the people thinking and capability so they have the fun to solve the problem, because that's our DNA. Meaning, purpose. You know, I think I agree with you. I guess everyone gets successful at certain things. You know, if the target is to achieve numbers, the only targets that people go to work, at one point they will say, well, I get bored. Because the people who love fishing, I don't know whether this is the right context, but the people who love fishing is actually not going there to count how many fish they catch every single day, because there is a lot of days they're not catching fish and they're still going there. Right? And I think the challenge is about that. And then the sense of belonging as well. As leaders, we all have blind spot. Understanding and accepting this will minimize the red flags. I love what you say about the example of the red flags. Number one, too harmonious. I don't think people will take this as a red flag. Wait, everyone agree with me. Everyone love what I say. Every time I rock up, everyone smile. Every time Natalie throw that pan out of the kitchen, everyone also agree. Everyone harmonious, but it could be a problem, and especially when there is silence in your group or organization. Negative conversations is another red flag. Leaders who are not aware about their expectation and the impact of their expectation, especially around health, safety, and culture, can bring the company down, basically. That's how I take it. Culture is not a one-night process, you know. So unfortunately, if you're not actually doing this and watching red flags every day, one day you wake up, it's already toxic. And when it's already toxic, you as the leaders have to eat the humble pie and you need to act first. And the great things that I like from you, you say the fact that I acknowledge that I'm not a good leader, I'm already one step ahead in my Buddha bowl restaurant, because I'm acknowledging that I have gaps, I have a blind spot, but then make an action to act. Do not tolerate brilliant jerk that obviously kill the organization. I think this is something that's difficult, but once again, you as the expert see it so many times, we tolerate this, we kill our business. And then you close it like this: business owners, leaders, you are important. And because of that, you are accountable for the success of your business, your people, and your culture, and all start from you. Aga, thank you so much for this 1 hour, so insightful. I really hope I do justice by summarizing something that I want to learn as well. So thank you.
This was so wonderful, Gus. Oh my gosh, what a wonderful job. And I just want to take a second to thank you for doing this work, because it's much needed. You make it so much fun to be with you here and have this chat. So I appreciate that. As a podcast host myself, I know that it's not easy. You made it so much fun for me. I appreciate it. But most of all, I appreciate the work that you are doing, helping businesses to succeed. There are so many people who have the best intentions and they are lacking resources. resources and tools. So it's wonderful to see the two of you putting so much effort and so much thought into the process and making sure that you put something out there for them to learn from and to use, hopefully, to create a better workplace in their companies. So thank you.
Thank you, Arka. It's been an absolute pleasure. I know I've learned a lot. And the analogy of the scrambled eggs, Gus, I had to make a note because you didn't mention that. When you said the toxic culture, liken it to a scrambled eggs because it's hard to go back to a poached egg. We'll never forget that whenever I eat scrambled eggs now moving forward. So thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you, Arka.
It was a pleasure for me too. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. For more information on Leader Talk and for some great resources to help your business grow, check out brainiact.com.au. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Leader Talk.
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 Leader Talk. Leader Talk.